Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Time to talk mental health once again on Radio City Talk with Mental Health Extra. It's a follow-up to Mental Health Monday, but we do it on a Tuesday. Jake Mills is in the studio from Chasing the Stigma.
Hello.
Wearing your Chasing the Stigma uniform today, I see.
I have. We had a breakfast event today at The Alchemist, so I had to put the branded stuff on, didn't I?
He's in full merch mode.
Yeah, I just haven't got the hat. I need to get a hat.
Mental health hats. Design ideas, send them in. Jake, good to see you. We're going to talk about yesterday's show in a few moments, some of the conversations that came off the back of it. First up, there was a story I wanted to pick out, which appeared in the media last week, and it was off the back of a survey. I'll tell you as it's reported in the Mail. Social media sites could be romanticising mental health problems while stopping young people from getting real medical help, research suggests. Experts say web giants such as Facebook and Instagram had a moral duty to help the cash-strapped NHS reach troubled young people and should allow it to advertise its services free of charge. The Royal Society for the Encouragement of Arts, Manufactures and Commerce found that 134,000 people aged between 14 and 30 turned to social media for mental health support rather than medical experts between July 2017 and May 2018. One of the researchers says, our research uncovered a huge amount of energy and appetite for peer-to-peer support and self-expression online, and there is much to celebrate. However, a culture of openness can lead us to being hostages to fortune, as more awareness leads to more conversations that risk confusing and misdirecting young people to sources of information and advice that lack credibility. Social media is not only a platform for people to access mental health services, increasingly it appears to be a driver of ill health in itself. I wonder whether there's an issue with this story and whether or not anything sort of flags up with you. I think sometimes this idea that if somebody expresses themselves from a mental health point of view on social media, that's either romanticising mental illness or they're doing it to grab people's attention or to earn likes or replies. I kind of disagree with that. It does raise some other issues, which we'll come on to. But first and foremost, I don't think if anyone ever says, I am battling suicide, I am feeling depressed, I felt this way for a long time, then no one's going, oh, here you are, romanticising social media. That's somebody being pretty raw with their emotional state, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like the story is kind of, it's got a right point, too. It's got a correct or valid point, but then they've tried to crowbar other things into it with the headlines, with the romanticising. It's trying to take it what's a valid point about how the internet can, and awareness can kind of lead to maybe some bad advice. But for me, that's not about let's not use social media. That's about let's look at the power of social media. Let's look at it with the numbers of people who are turning for help and advice at social media or on social media, and how we can be using that. You know, it's a very, very important tool, especially for young people. And we should be doing more to make it work in our favour and for good. It's not saying, which the story, as I said, is almost, it's confused, because that's almost saying social media is a bad thing. Instead of saying, look at the amount of people who are turning for help.
They say here, the RSA found young people were turning to blogs about mental health and Facebook pages devoted to topics such as depression to discuss their problems. It warned the reliance on unmoderated platforms meant that young people are at risk of being directed to inappropriate pages or groups for support. So actually, from that, I would say young people there are looking for this advice, mm-hmm. and they're actually finding a community of it through blogs and through Facebook as well. The concern, I guess, would be, is there a danger that they then get the wrong type of advice? And this presumably becomes about signposting and for those people to be saying, go and speak to your GP. This might not be relevant to you. You may have found a connection here, but actually you might be better suited looking at X, Y or Z.
Yeah, and I say it's two points really, because all these people are turning to social media, young people are turning to social media looking for help. That's fantastic. That's brilliant. But if there's a void of information, it will be fed or filled with potentially wrong or harmful information. So it's not about let's stop social media or stop people using social media or get NHS free advertising. It's about, well, how can we use and adapt our services to make social media, when they're going to look for that help and that support, they know exactly where to go. People arguably are going to social media and using social media as a way of trying to find the help that's available. If it's not obvious to anybody, then they're going to be going to these forums to try and get advice from each other. So it's about NHS and beyond the NHS working with these type of communities, with these forums, to say how can we make ourselves really available and obvious to the people who are turning for help. The main thing for me is that people are turning for help. That's huge.
The report also said the exercise also evidenced a troubling tendency where certain illnesses were ideated and posts associated using romanticised language of mental ill health and self-harm achieved large reach among young people. But it's subjective, isn't it, as to what's romantic language and as to whether or not those people saw it as romantic language or people saw it for what it actually was.
Exactly, and to say as well that it's stopping people from accessing help is ridiculous, because people are going on there to access help. It's just that the help isn't listed on there, or it's not being listed properly or as obvious as it should be. So it's not that it's stopping people from accessing help. People are going on there to access help and to find information. So it's about using social media better. Social media is not going to go away. So instead of kind of having this kind of approach of, well, it's not really for us, it should be, well, how do we use it? How do we get the best out of this?
Barnsley Football Club got a huge amount of credit through social media because they wrote to one of their fans who had been expressing that they had not been having a great time of it. And they got the chief exec of the football club personally wrote a letter to them and said, I understand things aren't going so well, just so you know. And then wrote a really wonderful letter about the support that might be available and the help that might be within the local area for them as well. And I thought, well, that's a good example of actually, if you do speak about it, there might be many people who misread it or who can't offer the advice. But there may also be people who go, oh, actually, I can help you out with that. Yeah. And we can do something about it.
It's brilliant. And yeah, I've actually spoken to the guy who was written to as well. But again, it is about realizing the responsibility. You know, the teams do have mind on their numbers. If you put anything out there about mental health and mental health campaign, working alongside a mental health charity or anything like that, as you know, Mick, when, and I think we had this conversation when we first talked about Mental Health Monday, and I said to you, as soon as you put anything out there, there'll be people who come forward and say, well, I need help. So it's a responsibility. It's not just about a gesture. It's not just about saying, oh, we take mental health serious. If you're putting that out there, some people will come to you and ask for help. So it's about being able to signpost and to you take that responsibility and help people. I thought it was absolutely brilliant and above and beyond what you would expect. But it just shows the people who are running it and what a great club it is that they've done that to look out for a fan.
Jake Mills is with us from Chasing the Stigma, Mental Health Extra from Radio City Talk. Any awards this week?
Yes. I don't like talking about this stuff.
Fine, yeah, well, we're going to move on.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, go on, but say good things about what you've been doing.
I've been shortlisted for a Great British Entrepreneur Award for Entrepreneur for Good Award.
is that the category?
Entrepreneur for Good.
Is that right?
I think so, yeah. Been shortlisted for that, which is nice, and for an Echo Award as well, which I'm told the judges thought that I deserved to be nominated for an award for that, for the work towards Chasing Stigma. It's nice. I'm not particularly a person who likes to look back and look at things that I've achieved and just kind of move forward. It's always the next thing for me. So if it wasn't for this, I probably wouldn't. So I suppose it's nice to take the opportunity to appreciate kind of how far things have come and how well the charity is doing, because, you know, we are doing well and we're helping a lot of people.
Isn't it easier to say, I don't do this for the awards, when you've been nominated for awards?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you actually nominate yourself for the awards and then get nominated and then you say, oh, I don't do it for the awards, and it's a lot easier. Yeah.
This is the thing. That's when you know you've made it, when you start getting awards that you've not actually had to enter for.
yeah. I know it's nice to have somebody come to you and say, we've recognised this. So I'm very grateful.
You've been nominated in the Community Personality Award. personality.
For the, yeah, community personality award for the Echo Awards.
Entrepreneur for Good, and the finalist of the NatWest Great British Entrepreneur Awards.
Yeah, it's like the Great British Bake Off, just not as delicious.
No cakes.
No.
Fewer cakes. Let's just talk about our guest on Mental Health Monday yesterday, Sam Serrano, 18 years of age. He's doing stand-up shows. We talked about the dangers that you put yourself in when you're doing stand-up, just in terms of going out there, putting yourself out there. But Sam's been doing it since he was 14.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? Scary. But he's doing great.
Can you get into clubs when you're that age? I guess if you're one of the performers.
Yeah, I suppose that's the best way to do it, actually. He's had the best approach, and he's getting into clubs by being paid to be there. I think what he's doing is it's fantastic, because comedy is such a great tool to be able to have conversations with people, and particularly with mental health, because I think people are so scared about mental health. And as soon as you give somebody the license to laugh, it makes the conversation so much easier to have. So, fair play to him on doing this.
In terms of the advice that he's had from other comedians, and I guess other comedians talk to each other about different ways of doing it, and when you've got somebody who is so young, I imagine the advice is there for people like Sam. Some comedians, he said, you know what, this mental health stuff, this depression stuff, you need to drop that. You need to, you know, get rid of that out of your set. Others were kind of suggesting, do it this way, play it for a laugh this way. It's interesting that, isn't it, that some will have seen that set and gone, you know what, it's not worth pursuing a gag there because you upset the room by bringing it up. Others went, well, actually, you get a greater payoff by upsetting the room and then bringing them back around. And I think if you go on that journey as an audience, that is a much greater payoff, isn't it, to go off?
Yeah, I mean, personally speaking, that's always been my type of comedy, and the things that I've enjoyed to do with comedy is making people feel awkward and uncomfortable, because I personally think once somebody's feeling uncomfortable and awkward, that payoff for the laugh to be able to allow them to feel comfortable again is so much better. But that's what comedy is. Comedy is kind of, it's different to every person, and I think he said, as long as he finds the audience who still find him funny and still want him to make them laugh, then he'll keep doing it. So you're never going to have a perfect gig. You're never going to have everyone on your side. But if he can find that niche and do it, then he should.
In part two of the conversation, Sarah Lawton and Dave Barnicle were talking about addictions, particularly based around alcohol. Dave Barnicle from The Brink, which does fantastic work in Liverpool City, said he'd gone well in depth. He was looking about prehistoric man and about when we started sort of using alcohol. But those figures and stats and facts that were out there in regard to UK's issues with drinking were way ahead of other nations around Europe. And it wasn't just about, you know, we the lads on a Friday night. This was about problem drinking. Adrian Charles has been in the press today talking about the fact that he drank a lot. And it was only when his doctor said you might actually be alcohol dependent that he suddenly thought, oh, I didn't even realise there was a problem there. But actually the stats and facts are out there that it's more than 2% of the population versus, I think in Sweden, 0.02% of the population. Those addictions are a real problem.
Yeah, I like that Dave was doing his PhD right on air yesterday. But no, it is a problem, and it is culture. And I don't know if we discussed this recently, but it's absolutely everywhere around you. Everywhere you look, every place you go, if you're driving down the road, it's on billboards, it's on the radio. If you're on the train, it's on adverts there. It's every kind of social activity seems to surround drinking. And there was, you know, really valid points made yesterday about how even on television, it's a kind of a coping mechanism, and then it's a celebration. It's like it's all kind of, everything seems to surround drinking. If you're kind of struggling with addiction to alcohol, how difficult must it be for you to kind of cope within a normal society that is publicising drink absolutely everywhere? You know, even in the World Cup is sponsored by beer, and football teams have got beer on the kit. You know, it's everywhere within society.
But also to the point where, like, in the adverts during the games at the World Cup, there were literally drones flying beer into people's houses.
Yeah.
And I guess if you look at gambling as an addiction as well, like, can you even watch football on TV anymore, knowing that every other advert will be one which will say your opinion matters and you can make money out of it?
Yeah. I honestly, I would find it ridiculously hard to.
But that's normalised. That's we as a society have made that absolutely the norm, that events which are sporting events are sponsored by junk food, sugar, alcohol, and betting companies. Yeah. And actually, we have welcomed that. We've named our stadiums after those companies. We have drunk those drinks exclusive to that particular brand within those stadiums as well. We've gone around wearing shirts with those betting companies on. You know, in some cases, sold children shirts, many of which now remove actually the beer and the betting companies to those, and we export that around the world as going, join us now at this gambling centres stadium. Join us now at this centre, which is, you know, covered in advertising in regard to alcohol. For a lot of people, it's not a problem, but for many people, it is a major problem.
And it would turn it away. I can't see how it wouldn't, really, especially if you're only starting that recovery. It's every single place you turn, and even as people who aren't struggling with those addictions, we're noticing them. So imagine if you were struggling with that. And it's all well and good to have a drink aware or gamble aware type of thing on there, but there needs to be more actually responsibility that comes with that, because it is a problem, and it's a huge problem in this country, and the huge problems. Addiction, obviously, is a mental illness anyway, but it can lead to so many more, and it can lead to many cases of suicide in this country as well.
Just tell us where you've been this morning. You had an event this morning?
Yes, yeah, so we were at the Alchemist. but we didn't have alcohol. We had coffee this morning. It was a bit of a breakfast meeting this morning, where we just sat round a table, had some breakfast with people from different businesses across the city, and we talked about mental health. And, you know, for 8:30 in the morning, it was a little bit deep, if you will. But, you know, the conversations were fantastic. And again, it's just another example of, as soon as you start talking about mental health, people are so willing to talk about it.
Businesses is going to take away from that event?
Mainly my business card. For future conversations about the charity. But what they're going to take away from that is the sense of how to be talking about your mental health, and importantly, how to signpost to the Hub of Hope. And I would like to think a sense of normality around the conversation. It's probably the most intense breakfast that a lot of them have had in a while. But, you know, it was... I don't know if many of them realised kind of it was going to be a mental health type of event, but everybody went away, or at least told me that they went away feeling a bit more confident about the subject. And again, you know, just a real big shout out to the team at The Alchemist, who have been so so good at talking about mental health and supporting mental health causes, whether it's ourselves chasing stigma or Calm, for example. They're doing a lot. They appreciate that it's a big thing, not just in society as a whole, but within kind of the workplace as well. And their responsibility as an organisation that is selling alcohol as well. They kind of accept that and take that on.
Good stuff. Thank you for your time. Later on this week, I'm going to be speaking to Sharon McDonnell. You may have seen her on social media if you're in the mental health community already. She's currently working on a survey for those who've lost a family member, a loved one, to suicide. There is a bereavement study which is up and about via social media at the moment. What I'll do, I'll get the links up to Dr. Sharon McDonnell, but if you actually type in Sharon McDonnell into any search engine on social media, or SJ McDon, you can get all the information about that particular survey. There's a deadline coming towards the end of the month, so should you with us on the program in the next few days, we'll turn that around as a podcast. But in terms of getting that out in regard to the results of that survey, which may hopefully influence future policies, then that's available to do online. If you just check that out via social media, SJ McDon, MC Don, D-O-N-N, and you can fill in the information there. If you have lost somebody to suicide, there is a suicide bereavement study, which they're trying to get more than 7,000 people to fill in ahead of the deadline at the end of the month. Jake Mills, we'll see you again very soon. Mental Health Extra from Radio City Talk. My name's Mick Coyle. Don't forget, you can check out various episodes of Mental Health Monday via the podcast, Mental Health Monday Podcast. Just search for that online. Mental Health Extra follows on a Tuesday as well. If you want to find mental health services close to you, type your postcode in to the Hub of Hope. That's hubofhope.co.uk.